Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome to another episode of Giant Mess, the super sloppy and silly sports entertainment talk show that covers New York Giants football, Mets baseball, movies, TV shows. It's got some comedy and life lessons mixed in for good measure. It is hosted by a giant mess. That's me, the real cinch, Neil Lynch. I'm a former college quarterback and pitcher, film and media studies major, and how to waste $120,000 by yours truly. I don't do any of that, but I like to talk about it. So let's talk about it. On today's episode, we're going to be talking about Sundance Film Festival was last month, but there are a bunch of movies that I guess I should know about, that you should know about, that we should talk about to figure out what is worth your time and energy and effort and attention. We'll also dive into IMDb's guide to the 2020, the show on ABC with Barbara Walters. No. 2024 year in TV, a look ahead, even though we're now half, like a full month and a half, 2 months into the new year. There are a bunch of shows that are going to come out hopefully this year that I'm looking forward to. So we'll go down the list. It's a long list, so I'm trying to narrow it down to like a dozen or so. And Netflix has revealed their 2024 slate of programming, so I thought I would delve into that. So without further ado, let's get it started up in here. Let's talk movies. Sundance happened. I don't know when. It's usually in January. But there are a lot of outlets now reporting on what they saw and kind of giving us a better idea of like, all right, here are the movies that you should watch out for. There are some winners in here. I guess it's the 40th edition of the festival. Oh, cool, man. This one, I'm just looking at like the movie posters. There's one where like, I think David Schwimmer is like it's called Little Death, a middle-aged filmmaker on the verge of a breakthrough. Two kids in search of a lost backpack, a small dog a long way from home. Well, that just screams indie movie. it's got David Schwimmer, Jenna Malone. It's from Protozoa Pictures, Psycho Films. Let's see here. A middle-aged filmmaker on the verge of a breakthrough. I mean, the synopsis doesn't do anything for me. Come on, guy. That's the one that kind of jumped out at me. And then there was just solely going based off the movie posters. Yeah, I don't even know what this one is. It didn't even show up. Oh, Real Pain, directed by Jesse Eisenberg, who apparently went to high school with my lady's ex-husband. Very cool. Mismatched cousins David and Benji reunite for a tour through Poland to honor their beloved grandmother. The adventure takes a turn when the pair's old tensions resurface against the backdrop of their family history. Ooh la la. Yeah, Kieran Culkin and Jesse Eisenberg, I think, play the two cousins. So, Love Lies Bleeding, Kristen Stewart, stars in the crime-laced romantic thriller. Director Rose Glass seems to have injected some horror influences into this road trip tale, which finds Kristen Stewart playing a gym manager who falls for a bodybuilder who's passing through town en route to Vegas. Intensity, violence, gore. Ed Harris is also in it as Kristen Stewart's creepy criminal father. And A24 snatched this one up pre-festival, so you know it's going to be good if A24's got it. It's coming out March 8th. Which apparently people are raving about Kristen Stewart's performance in that. Dee Dee, coming of age story, early 2000s time capsule, inspired by the director's own upbringing in Fremont, California. Dee Dee means little brother in Mandarin, spotlights a winning ensemble of mostly unknown actors, kids discovered via street casting, okay, and in skate parks. Teenage conformity in the MySpace era. Amidst the nostalgic 2000 references to tech decks, flip phones, and chats with beloved IM bot Smarter Child, there's a palpable awareness of how cultural identity as a Taiwanese American is tied to his sense of self. I guess he had an Oscar nomination for his documentary short, and this Dee Dee won a bunch of jury awards, including the U.S. Dramatic Audience Award. Focus Features picked it up. Funny and heartfelt love letter to his younger self. I'm not going to lie, this sounds a lot like that Jonah Hill movie. You know, obviously not about a Taiwanese American, but was it called? Mid-90s, something like that. I think I turned it off. I just couldn't. I was like, it gave me like, I think it gave me like flashbacks, like bad flashbacks. I was just like, no, I don't want to really live this. Freaky Tales is named after a song by Oakland rapper Too Short. The Captain Marvel co-directors Anna Boden and Ryan Fleck rolled the dice with an ambitious story set in 1980s Oakland that stars Pedro Pascal, yeah, Ben Mendelsohn, hell yeah, and Jay Ellis. In this interconnected story, a mysterious force weaves together four different storylines populated by punks, aspiring rappers, a henchman, and a famous basketball player. If you like to get nerdy about what's happening behind the scenes, we are way into Macro, the production company that also instrumental in the making of Sorry to Bother You and They Clone Turn Around. Sold. Okay? That's all you had to say. That's probably all you needed to say. Just mention Pedro Pascal, Ben Mendelsohn, Sorry to Bother You, They Clone Tyrone. Sign me the fuck up. The American Society of Magical... I think I'm allowed to say it. Negroes? Pretty sure I can say it. Developed as part of the Sundance Screenwriters and Directors Lab, this debut feature had a full circle moment when it premiered at the festival. Writer-director Kobe Libby flips the tired magical Negro trope on its head in his fantastical satirical comedy about a young man who's recruited into a secret society of magical black people who dedicate their lives to making white people's lives easier. In Libby's words, making the film allowed him to explore some of the defense mechanisms he was taught to respond to racism and how to keep himself safe in America. Justice Smith, David Alan Greer, Aisha Hines, and Rupert Friend coming out from Focus Features. So Justice Smith, I kind of dig as an actor. David, I mean, he's not his dad. Totally different actor than his dad. And I love David Alan Greer going back to In Living Color days. So that's that I'll add that to the docket. Add that to the queue. Pony Boy, boy with an I. Based on their short film of the same name, writer-star River Gallo was inspired to write Pony Boy by their experiences growing up intersex in New Jersey, calling the state my biggest muse. In their first narrative film created by and starring an out intersex person, yikes. I mean, let's throw a couple more spike treads. Is that what that was called? On the highway. Gallo stars as Pony Boy, an intersex runaway who works at a laundromat and makes ends meet as a sex worker. Gal's lived experience sandwiched with a crime thriller plot involving a drug deal gone wrong. I'll just pass on this. I don't think I'll ever see that. Sorry. Sasquatch Sunset, directed to David and Nathan Zellner's latest stars Riley Keough and Jesse Eisenberg, in a story about a unique family. Turns out that it does in fact mean a family of Sasquatches are the center of the tale, with Eisenberg and Keough spending hours in the makeup chair to become the mythical beast. Oh, fuck yeah, dude. Full makeup, full body hair, no lines. Bleecker Street acquired theatrical rights, and Ari Oster serves as executive producer. Fuck yeah. The Zellners are probably best known for the quirky Kumiko the Treasure Hunter, so the headlines about zero dialogue, bodily fluids, and more post-premiere didn't come as a complete shock. Oh, that's going to be really interesting. Already talked about Little Death, but here's some more details about it. Former friend David Schwimmer stars in music video director Jack Beggart's remake of his short film La Petite Meute for what promises to be a stylish and potentially effects-heavy story of a screenwriter whose identity crisis slams him into two younger people desperate for their next opioid fix. We're excited to see what Schwimmer can do in an experimental film. Yeah, no shit. And for another chance to see Talia Ryder on the big screen. Don't know who that is. So sad. Come on now. Okay, where have I seen you before? When can I see you again? She has been in Never Rarely, Sometimes Always. Haven't seen it. The Sweeties, never seen it. West Side Story, never seen it. And Do Revenge, which I have seen. She played Gabby in that, which I believe was the sister of the ex-boyfriend upon whom the ex-partner wanted revenge on. Did not word that correctly, but you get it. Oh, and I think Gabby ends up with, spoiler alert, Ethan Hawke and Uma Thurman's daughter. What is her name? Something Hawke. Damn it. I should know that. Oh, and Darren Aronofsky is one of the movie's producers. So, yeah, I might give that a shotsky. Presence. Iconic director Steven Soderbergh released his second secret project in 6 months, this time as part of Sundance's premieres lineup. Presence is a horror thriller about a suburban family's encounter with a mysterious entity drove some viewers to walk out due to the film's stress factor, but sparked engaging conversation. Shot in a single location, script by David Koepp, who wrote Jurassic Park and Mission Impossible, the enigmatic new film was unheard of before the Sundance lineup announcement. It was scooped up by Neon. I'm into it. It's kind of got some Parasite vibes to it. People walking out, that's always interesting buzz. Very polarizing. I might have to give it a shot. Love Me, Kristen Stewart and Stephen Young, starring this unconventional post-apocalyptic love story between a buoy and a satellite, written and directed by husband and wife team Sam and Andy Zucchero. In their feature film debut, the description is intentionally cryptic. Stewart and Young have been making savvy career choices, and we trust Love Me will be a unique addition to the Sundance lineup. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I like as much shit as people give Kristen Stewart. She is mesmerizing. She is entrancing. And Stephen Young, I mean, everything he does is just amazing. Beef, Nope. I could go on. I should go on, but I won't. So yeah, I think I'll dive in on that. Thelma, a sweet and funny caper, which puts the beloved Nebraska star in the spotlight. She teams up with the late Richard Roundtree in one of his final roles before his passing to prove her independence and ensure this worst kind of modern-day theft doesn't get away with her money. She plays a wilderly. You know what? Wilderly kind of sounds cool. Oh, she's so wilderly. A widowed elderly woman victimized by a phone scam. So she decides to take revenge. I think I have seen a teaser or promo for this. June Squibb is so goddamn adorable. If I'm thinking of the right woman, she is just like, yeah. Oh, she's adorable. Do yourself a favor and just Google June Squibb. She was Kate Grant in Nebraska, Cousin Gretchen in In-N-Out, Hubie's mom in Hubie Halloween, and Helen Schmidt in About Schmidt. And she's just adorable. So that, yes. And Richard Roundtree, I mean, fucking Shaft, bro. Fred Hitchinger, who is in White Lotus Season 1, Parker Posey and Clark Gregg also star, but Squibb steals the show. It's an action comedy where Xing out of a pop-up ad and remembering a computer password, the high stakes demands of the climax. Josh Morgan's film will be bringing last warm fuzzies to the masses. Sold to Magnolia Pictures. Josh Morgan. What have you done for me lately? Let's see here. I guess, nope. Nothing that I would know. Unless that's the, oh yeah. So yeah, he's only directed two... He only has two directing credits. One is a short, and this is his feature film debut. He has more credits as an actor, some as a writer, some as an editor. So, I don't know. I'm into it. It's What's Inside was purchased by Netflix. It's a horror thriller, $17 million price tag for worldwide rights. Cyrus convinces Shelby to attend older friend Ruben's pre-wedding party and reunites with college pals. Tensions arise when a strange classmate, Forbes, arrives. Of course, fucking Forbes, dude. Can't believe he's here. Rivalries and old romance flare up as the game goes off the rails, causing hysteria. Okay. I'm pretty much a fan of that kind of template. And it's on Netflix, so it's like, you know, there'll be a nice little Friday night, Saturday night. Pop an Eddie and just go to the moon. So yeah, I'm probably I'm into it. So yeah, that's I won't get into the documentaries, but that's the Sundance films to keep an eye on over the course of the year. Let's move on to TV. Television. IMDb has their guide to television in 2024. The best shows, new shows, returning shows, shows that are ending. I think there were 36 shows on their list, and there are probably 9 shows that I'm excited about. 7 shows I might try out, and then there's 16. So there's 16 total that I'm presenting. I know, I couldn't get it down to 10. Shocker. First one's Ted. I had mentioned I'd been watching this. I had completed this the season. It's a very easy watch. There's like 7 episodes on Peacock. It's got an 8 out of 10 IMDb, I believe. I gave it an 8 out of 10. I was I heard the commercials for this on Spotify because I'm a cheap fuck. It doesn't pay for premium, even though my daughter has begged me. My 5-year-old daughter has begged me. She's like, just pay for it. She's like, why are there ads? And I was like, well, because I don't pay for it. And she's like, just pay for it. Like, when your 5-year-old is doing that, you know, you might be a cheapskate. But yeah, I kept hearing the audio ads on Spotify, and I was like, God, I think this is dumb, right? This is going to be stupid. They had 2 movies. You did your thing. Like, do we need a prequel TV series? And it turns out, yes, we did. So in the TV series, it's 1993. Ted the Bear's moment of fame has passed because he got famous in the mid-80s, right? When he first came to life. He's living back home with his best friend, John Bennett, and his family. While Ted may be a lousy influence on John, he's a loyal pal who'll go out on a limb for friendship. Yeah, because I think John Bennett was like 8 when he wished for Ted, which is bonkers, because when you're 8, that's usually when you start shedding the stuffed animals and the childhood toys. No? Am I wrong about that? So 8 feels like it's a little old to be wishing for it. But so now John Bennett's in high school, junior in high school. So he's like 16. I mean, it's like essentially live action Family Guy, basically live action Family Guy. You know, even like the music, like the little, what do they call them? Stingers. Those little, like, it, when they transition from one scene to the next, they have that little music that plays. Like, that is, like identical to what you hear in Family Guy. And then they actually have, like, because it's Seth MacFarlane, they have a lot of the voice actors from Family Guy that actually play real-life humans in this show. I loved it. It's rare that I get to see a TV series these days that's like actually funny, that makes you laugh. And this did it. So I think the dad was awesome. The mother, Alana Ubach. I feel like I get her confused with another actress, but she kind of looks like Maria Bamford a little bit. And I'm trying to think of the woman that was in not Cruel Intentions. Oh, she was Mama Imelda. She voiced Mama Imelda in Coco. Huh. She was Judge Jeanine Pirro in Bombshell. She plays Suze or Susie in Euphoria. I haven't seen it. She's the titular character in Girlfriend's Guide to Divorce. She is a voice in American Dad. She's a voice in Family Guy. Where did I first see her, though? Oh, she was Shannon in Mythic Quest. I always get her confused. When did that? There was like a spoof. Was it not another teen movie where they spoofed a scene from Cruel Intentions? Is that her? No, right? Definitely not. Can't be. Wow, she was in Two Guys, a Girl, and a Pizza Place. Legally Blonde. Okay. West Wing. Monk? Meet the Fockers? Herbie Fully Loaded. House. Yeah, she's Friday Night Lights. Oh my God. Awaiting. That has to be it, right? That's it. Waiting. She plays Naomi, who's the super intense waitress that's like swearing up a storm and like cursing and is so pissed off all the time. Boom shakalaka. If you haven't seen Waiting, I don't know that we can be friends. Yeah, one of the most underrated comedies of all time. I put it up there with like another one would be Saving Silverman. Something that does not get a lot of, is not in the zeitgeist, not exactly in pop culture cachet type thing. But like the people who have seen it, fucking love it. This guy included. So I believe that's where I saw her, but I keep getting her confused with the, I think it's the Cruel Intentions spoof scene in Not Another Teen Movie. Was the Cruel Intentions spoof scene in that movie? Come on, Neil. Oh, Mia Kirshner? Oh, that might be it. Oh, boy. Oh, okay. Well, Alana Ubach. She's amazing. The dad's amazing. The cousin is amazing. It's like, I was thinking about this as I'm watching. I'm like, I feel like a lot of people that want to be edgy with their comedy have to set their productions in like the 90s, 80s, 70s. You know, like F is for Family, Bill Burr, animated series on Netflix, set in the 70s. So it's like he can get away with a lot more shit because it's like that's what happened in the 70s, or at least that's what he claims. I feel like that's the same motivation here. It's like, let's do something in the 90s so that we can say a bunch of crazy shit. But they do have like the cousin, John Bennett's cousin, I guess her mother and father are not in the picture. And so she lives with them, the Bennetts. And so she's like kind of the, not the Meg Griffin. Who's the daughter in American Dad? There's Stan, Chloe? No. It's the daughter. I mean, essentially the daughter in American Dad, who I believe is voiced by Seth MacFarlane's like sister, I think, who always is like, that's racist. Da, 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 da. It's like the modern day 2023 voice of reason type of thing. So yeah, that nice, clean, crisp watch. Highly recommend. Next one is Hazbin Hotel. It's an animated comedy crime series. Apparently has a 7.8 out of 10 IMDb from almost 14,000 votes. It's on Prime. An attempt to find a nonviolent alternative for reducing hell's overpopulation, the daughter of Lucifer opens a rehab hotel that offers a group of misfit demons a chance at redemption. It's an animated musical comedy, and the creator Vivian Medrano financed her YouTube pilot for Harbin Hotel, largely via Patreon, but was able to gain the backing of A24 and MGM for a full season. So that's something that I threw on the queue. Mr. and Mrs. Smith. You know, it's like, all right, sure, why not? Donald Glover, love him. Maya Erskine, feel like, was she in Everything Everywhere All at Once? Was that her? I don't think so. Nope. Pen 15, which was, I think, is another, oh no, it's a Hulu show. She was Sully in Obi-Wan Kenobi, voiced someone on Bob's Burgers, was a voice of Misha on Big Mouth. Robot Chicken, okay, BoJack, oh, Ivy Tran, I'm BoJack Horseman, okay, and she was Alice in Plus One, that's where I'm, okay, dude, I mean, you know, I think I said this last year around this time when I was running down my top rom-coms of all time, Plus One has got to be up there, at least one of the most underrated rom-coms of our era, came out in 2019, not rated, but she was great in that. So, I mean, I like her. I like him. Paul Dano's in it. Parker Posey's in it. Two strangers land jobs with a spy agency that offers them a life of espionage, wealth, and travel. The catch, their new identities are in an arranged marriage. According to IMDb, the series already knows you might be wondering why it has to exist or why it shares a name with that Brad and Angelina movie if it's not an actual remake. Phoebe Waller-Bridge, who, you know, I just saw Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. Better than I expected. And a major reason why was because of Phoebe Waller-Bridge. She's like awesome. And I've seen, you know, the algo keeps feeding me Fleabag. It's like, watch Fleabag. And I'm like, I don't want to watch Fleabag. I might have to give Fleabag a shot now because Phoebe Waller-Bridge in The Dial of Destiny was legit. She was awesome. I think the only downside to Dial of Destiny was trying to watch Harrison Ford run. God bless him. He's 70. I think he's 70 some odd years old. Still looking good. Still running around, but it's like you can tell. Oof. Time to take your pills. Yes, Phoebe Waller-Bridge was supposed to star opposite Donald Glover before Maya Erskine took over the role. So, I mean, I'm not dying to watch this. This is going to be, I mean, it is interesting. The episodes are designed as mysteries of the week, similar to Poker Face. That's another show that has been, that you would have thought I would have watched by now because I did like Russian Doll so much, but alas, I have not tuned in yet. So I don't know that I'll get around this one, but who knows if it gets more buzz, I don't know. It just like, I've seen the movie. I don't know. Couple other series that I probably will not watch, but I know that are highly anticipated. True Detective, that's going on right now on HBO Max. I think the major criticism I've heard is that the writing sucks, that Jodie Foster is awesome, but it's like you give her shit dialogue, it's going to be not a great experience. So I've not tuned into that. I mean, after the season two debacle, you know, I mean, the Mahershala Ali season, which was season three, I think was a step up from season two. But I just, I guess season two left such a sour taste in my mouth that I was like, nah, you're not going to get me on this one. And I don't think they're going to turn around the series with season four either. Avatar The Last Airbender, which I know people are into that. I'm not. And then there's another Walking Dead show or something. I don't know. I can't. As much as I think I do like zombie movies. I just couldn't get into The Walking Dead. I think I said it before, but there was like a whole, like if you just do the math, like there should not be any zombies left. Anywho, Shogun. I think there was a ad for this during the Super Bowl. When a mysterious European ship is found marooned in a nearby fishing village, Lord Yoshi Toranaga discovers secrets that could tip the scales of power and devastate its enemies. History buffs are in for a treat with this highly detailed adaptation of James Clavell's best-selling novel. Set at the dawn of the 17th century, it's doubling down on what it means to make a historical epic. Unlike the 1980s miniseries, don't remember that, 10-episode drama focuses on Japanese characters and the impact of outside forces in the region. The first two episodes on FX, Hulu, Disney+, starting February 27th, 2 weeks. So that could be something I could get into big time. I'm not necessarily a history buff. I'm more of a look into the future kind of guy. But I don't know. Something about it speaks to me. Adventure, drama, history. Yeah. It will be probably a little bit lower down on the totem pole, given some of the other titles on this list. But, you know, something to keep in the back pocket. Three Body Problem. This is a adventure, drama, fantasy. Follows the story of humanity's first contact with an alien civilization, seeing humanity being vulnerable to the same external threat. I don't recognize any of the cast, but Earth is threatened by an alien race who is eons ahead of us when it comes to tech and weaponry. It's based on the first book in the Remembrance of Earth's Past trilogy. David Benioff and D.B. Weiss of Game of Thrones fame are leading the charge. They don't have to worry about any of the books not being written and having to fill in the gaps and the blanks here. All three books have been written, so they can stick to the source material and they don't have to do any fanfic type stuff. Prepare for overlapping timelines. Love it. Massive cast of characters. Okay. Benedict Wong. All right. Aiza Gonzalez. Rosalind Chow. Super complicated physics that should look cool on your chosen screen. March 21st on Netflix. Yeah. Big time in on that. Next one, I'm given the success of The Last of Us, I'm excited about Fallout. I mean, I never played The Last of Us. I probably should. Fallout was another one where I'm familiar with it. I've seen clips, whatever, all that jazz. Never actually played it. But it's in a future post-apocalyptic. Post-apocalyptic Los Angeles, brought about by nuclear decimation. Citizens must live in underground bunkers to protect themselves from radiation, mutants, and mandates. You know what? The beauty of watching all this post-apocalyptic shit is I have a pretty good idea of what to do. You know? Get yourself underground. Get yourself a bunker. Get yourself underground. I mean, how many shows have I watched now where it's just like, we're just going to go underground? Silo. I'm watching Foundation now on Apple TV. They're underground. Just like, we just gotta get down deep. Let's burrow a little bit. So this one's on Prime Video. Ella Purnell, who is from Yellow Jackets, stars as an underground vault dweller who ventures out into the retro futuristic world of post-nuclear war Los Angeles. I do remember that it was like, even though it's set in the future, there was a lot of like 50s style aesthetic to it, which was kind of weird, creepy. And it's developed by Lisa Joy and Jonathan Nolan, the creative heads behind Westworld. So, understandably, Westworld kind of went off the rails, didn't exactly go where a lot of people would have hoped, would have liked. I don't think anything could really match or live up to season one. That being said, yeah, sure, I was disappointed a little bit, but still, beautifully shot, great actors, great cast, and great dialogue. It's just the direction that they went in. It was like, you're going to go this way when you can go, I don't know. So, I mean, I have confidence in them. And maybe they have learned a thing or two from Westworld. So, hopefully that falls in the footsteps of The Last of Us. That premieres April 12th on Prime. This is the big one, though. This next one, I'm looking at my list here. This is probably the most anticipated for me. It's in the top three or four. I gotta backtrack there, but I do think this has the potential to be, because it is a new series, the other series that I'm looking at on this list are coming back, right? I think this has the potential to be the breakout series that will really help propel the universe that Matt Reeves has built with the Batman. Is it Matt Reeves? Yeah, Matt Reeves. So, I mean, anyone who's followed my podcast, which is officially zero people, I love the Batman. And I was disappointed to hear that when James Gunn officially took over and announced all his projects, that he had all these Batman projects, and like Matt Reeves, the Batman universe or whatever, was considered an Elseworld. And it's like, it felt like we're not like canceling the project, but we are certainly throwing a huge bucket of water on it. It's like we're kind of softening and dampening its impact and its allure by, we're going to throw all this two or three other Batman shit at you. And it's like, there's going to be another Batman and this Batman. It's just like, what the fuck, dude? You have something here with the Batman and Robert Pattinson, and now you're just going to, I don't know. I feel like they're like slowly nudging it out and phasing it out. And I think it's the wrong move. But at the same time, The Penguin is the series that I gave the longest fucking intro to. The Penguin, starring Colin Farrell as the Penguin, Oswald Cobblepot. This is him making a play to grab the reins of the crime world in Gotham. Kristen Milioti, who you might remember from How I Met Your Mother. She was the mother. She was in an episode of Black Mirror that was top notch. I think she's in another series on Prime or Hulu that's supposed to be pretty good, sci-fi. Picking up right after The Batman, where the Riddler nearly made Gotham the new Atlantis, we'll see how Oswald Cobblepot, aka the Penguin, looks to take advantage of the chaos and establish himself as the city's new boss. Colin Farrell returns the role with his layers of makeup and prosthetics. He'll be challenged by Sophia Falcone, the daughter of Cobblepot's deceased former boss, Carmine Falcone. Christine Milioti, someone who we'd watch every day in anything, I second that, plays Falcone in the next chapter of the DC Elseworlds universe. So stupid. The franchise that lives independently from the universe James Gunn is building. Okay. We, perhaps like you, are wondering how this story will unfurl without Batman shutting it down. Is a story credibility test we're here for. It's expected to release in 2024, so it doesn't have an official release date, I don't think, but, I mean, put all the chips in the middle of the table on this one. I really do think it's going to be awesome. There's Daredevil Born Again is on the list. I'm not too crazy about it. I'll just say that. I never really got into Daredevil, which is, I don't know why. I know they're trying to make him a bigger part of the MCU. They brought him in for She-Hulk, the She-Hulk series. I don't know. I'm just not. I think he had a cameo in a movie. Was it Spider-Man No Way Home? I think he had a cameo there. I'm just, I don't know. it's not tickling my fancy. Here's another one that is an interesting development. And it's and I think it might be a case of pandemic fever, where it's like we're all in a certain state or condition, and we're kind of almost held captive. And so there was very few things to look forward to or new things that were going on during that time period. I'm probably not making any sense, but WandaVision came out during the pandemic, right? It was year two of the 2-week pandemic. And one of the big characters that made a huge impact and that kind of stuck with fans and that became popular and that fans really liked was Agatha Harkness, played by Catherine Hahn. I love Catherine Hahn, and she deserves to have more vehicles and to be part of more projects and productions. But I don't know that this needed to happen. And I feel like there was probably zero plans to have this in the fold. And then, I think that the Marvel, like Feige or probably someone that works with him, saw the buzz generated on social media about Agatha and the memes and the whatnots. And they were like, yep, she deserves her own show. So we'll see. I'm not crazy about it, but said after the events of WandaVision, Agatha Harkness recruits some unlikely allies on her quest to regain her former powers. But Aubrey Plaza's in it, and I do appreciate her and her acting. She had a great commercial during the Super Bowl. It's a blast, Mountain Dew. Marvel broke the superhero series mold in the best way with 2021's WandaVision, paying tribute to decades of beloved sitcoms with Wanda Maximoff at the center of the story. In the end, it turned out she wasn't the only witch playing house in Westview, and the reveal of nosy neighbor Agnes as sorceress Agatha Harkness made for a magic-filled finale battle and a not-so-conclusive end for Agatha. The upcoming villain-centric spinoff has already had a handful of title changes. I'm not sure what all that means, but you can sign us up for more Catherine Hahn any day, especially if she has a coven, you idiot, coven of ancient witches on hand, potentially including Aubrey Plaza to stir up the trouble. So that could be a cool little duo, Aubrey Plaza and Catherine Hahn, witches. Yeah. Listen, I think it was WandaVision was definitely off the beaten path. Like they said, broke the mold. And was just like crazy to watch. I remember being, completely just confused for the first 2, 3, 4 episodes. And Agatha was a nice breath of fresh air. Catherine Hahn's awesome, but it was 2021. It was pandemic. People had pandemic brain. So I don't know that it's going to carry over now that we're not in the pandemic. I know that's such a stupid thing to say, but like, I don't know. It's just a gut feeling. I mean, here's another one that's just like, meh, Ironheart. Genius teenage inventor Riri Williams creates the most advanced suit of armor since Iron Man. Dominic Thorne reprises her role as a tech genius MIT student Riri Williams in this upcoming 6-episode miniseries. Not much has been revealed about the plot. We do know it takes place after the events of Black Panther Wakanda Forever. It'll be set in her hometown of Chicago. Alden Ehrenreich, Anthony Ramos, Cree Summer, and Sacha Baron Cohen are rumored to be in the mix, with Sacha Baron Cohen rumored to play the demon Mephisto. Whoa. MCU fans have been predicting Mephisto's arrival in every series since WandaVision, so we'll have to wait and see if he makes an appearance. I mean, if you don't throw that last bit in, it's probably a pass for me, dog. It just felt like they wanted her to steal the scene in Black Panther Wakanda Forever, and it felt forced. And this feels forced. I don't know. But knowing that, Mephisto, who everyone's been clamoring about, and Sacha Baron Cohen, like that could turn the tide for me. That might have flipped the switch. I might have to tune in. The Gentlemen, action crime comedy. Eddie Halstead inherits a large estate from his father, unaware it fronts Pearson's drug empire. With no crime experience, he must take over the operation or lose the estate. Guy Ritchie dives back into the criminal underworld, an 8-episode series for Netflix. Theo James from The White Lotus season 2. stars as Eddie Horniman, an estranged aristocrat who must navigate a criminal empire when he inherits the biggest weed farm in Europe. Series cast includes Giancarlo Esposito, hell yeah, Julie Richardson, hell yeah, Kaya Scodelario, hell yeah, and Peter Serafinowicz, who I think I know, but I'm just going to double check real quick. Who's that guy? Na 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 na. Oh, okay. Yeah, sure. Oh, he played the Tick. He's the sommelier in John Wick Chapter 2, Daenerys and Saul in Guardians of the Galaxy, Aldo in Spy, Pete in Shaun of the Dead. Yeah, I know. I know this dude. Wasn't he in The Kingsman? I'm pretty sure he was in The Kingsman, and he was in Couples Retreat as that, like, the camp counselor guy, wasn't he? Whoa, this guy's been in a shit ton of stuff. Yeah, okay. Yeah, this guy rules. So, again, I mean, I like The Gentleman, the movie. Came out in 2019. Not a huge fan of Theo James. I don't dislike him. I just, he doesn't really move the needle for me. But that's a pretty decent cast. So, if you're a Big Guy Ritchie guy, maybe. The Bear. People have been barking at me. Barking up my trunk to say, hey, asshole. Get on the train, the Bear train. And I feel like now that my lady has got me all caught up and twisted, you know, she's got me on a string and she loves it, I'm probably gonna have to watch it. It just make every time, every promo and clip I see makes me so fucking anxious. It just rattles me every time. Every time, it's just like, no, I don't want to be in the kitchen where all hell's breaking loose. No, I don't like stress. Which explains why I'm not successful in a lot of what I do. So The Bear, yeah, okay, sure. The Boys, this is what I'm talking about. Most anticipated? It's like a 1A, 1B situation with another title on this list. I'll tell you that much. The Boys. Currently has an 8.7 out of 10 rating on IMDb. I gave it a 9 out of 10. What we don't know about season 4 of Prime Video's subversive superhero series could fill the library at Vought Tower. And yet there are a few interesting developments for us to ponder while we wait for Butcher and the Boys' return. Susan Hayward and Valerie Curry will join the cast as Supes, while Rosemary DeWitt is stepping in as Huey's mom. What we really want to know is, what character is Jeffrey Dean Morgan playing in all this? Oh, fuck yeah, dude. The comedian from Watchmen? You couldn't have got a better guy to get involved in the mix. The actor appears briefly in the season teaser, but creator Eric Kripke seems to be keeping all other details to himself. Some of the plot points from Gen V, the spinoff series, that I liked a lot, even though it rubbed me the wrong way in a certain, but because I'm a old fart, essentially, and I've lost complete touch with the youth, the youths. I just don't. It's so foreign to me. But I did like the show overall. There's that one guy that was just like, "What is your deal?" What's his name? Anthony? Antonio? So yeah, make sure you watch Gen V before you see the new season of The Boys, if you haven't done that yet. This show just like keeps getting better and better. So fucking good. So I'm psyched and pumped to see. There's no date on when it's supposed to premiere. It's expected in 2024. But if you did watch Gen V, if you watched the season finale of Gen V, you would understand why the plot points are tied together. So I don't want to spoil Gen V for anyone, but some cameos in the season finale from The Boys. And it, man, I tell you, every time, and I don't want to spoil anything, but every time, I'm going to spoil it. Every time Homelander is on screen, it is spine tingling. That fucking actor and that character, it's like he legitimately has me shitting my pants every time he comes on the screen. Like, what is he about to do? I'll just leave it at that. The Night Agent. This is an action drama thriller, 7.5 out of 10 on IMDb. A low-level FBI agent, Peter Sutherland, works in the basement of the White House, manning a phone that never rings until the night it does, propelling him into a conspiracy that leads all the way to the Oval Office. So I have seen this placed in front of me on Netflix a whole bunch of times. It became a global hit last spring. Showrunner Sean Ryan, who is behind The Shield and Lie to Me, envisioned a new storyline for each potential new season, though it's hard to imagine the romance between Sutherland and tech entrepreneur Rose Larkin taking a back seat, even as he's dispatched on his first overseas assignment and she's potentially headed back to California to rebuild her life out there. So, maybe I'll give that up. Maybe I'll dive into that, because I have had a couple people say, hey, Night Agent? I'm like, I don't know. No. But maybe yes. I don't know. Wednesday is also on this list. I did not watch Wednesday. I know it rocked the boat a little bit, caused some waves. So was it Jenna Ortega's in that? She's perfect as Wednesday Adams. I wonder if Christina Ricci is in it. I believe she is, so I might have to tune in just for that alone. But it's not for me, I don't think. So I'm okay with, unless, I don't know, my lady's daughter wants to get involved, and it's like, all right, yeah, sure. Let's bond, baby. Only Murders in the Building. I don't know if this is season 2 or season 3. This is season 4? No. Oh, 4? It is season 4. The Arconia residents will be hard at work solving the murder of Charles's stunt double, Saz Pataki, played by Jane Lynch, who was shot in the season 3 finale. Well, I just spoiled the season 3 for you, so there you go. Fuck, I thought it was only in season 2. It's already 3 seasons? Gotta get on that. Next up, House of the Dragon. 8.4 out of 10 on IMDb. I gave it a 9 out of 10. An internal succession war with House Targaryen at the height of its power, 172 years before the birth of Daenerys. Obviously is on Max. Second season promises a very bloody feast to come, according to showrunner Ryan Condal, as the civil war between Rhaenyra and her half-brother Aegon II takes center stage. Uptick in action, abundance of dragons, and there's going to be there's multiple Game of Thrones spinoffs, which I don't know that that's really necessary. But given how House of Dragon has been successful, it's kind of warranted, I guess. Justified. Behind the scenes, Alan Taylor, who directed a handful of the flagship show's pivotal episodes, joins the crew as director and executive producer. So that is, it all sounds good to me. That's also expected in 2024, no date given. Now, this is the show that is the 1B, possibly to The Boys being 1A, Severance. 8.7 out of 10 on IMDb. I give it a 9 out of 10. Mark leads a team of office workers whose memories have been surgically divided between their work and personal lives. When a mysterious colleague appears outside of work, it begins a journey to discover the truth about their jobs. It's a drama, mystery, sci-fi starring Adam Scott. It's on Apple TV. There were a lot of rumors and speculation that there were so many creative differences and conflicts amongst the creatives, button heads, and it just like seemed like the divorce was imminent, and that they were not ever going to be able to kumbaya this shit. And then looks like it's back on, baby. Season 2. Yeah, Ben Stiller, who's a producer, he posted a shot from on set on social media after the WA strikes ended last year, so that they're in full swing and full production. So we want to, the re-merging of Mark, Helly, Dylan, and Irving's Any Audi consciousness, we want to know how that is going to turn out, but also what other departments might be tucked away within the halls of Lumen Industries. So happy that's coming back. That really spoke to me in 2022, because it was like, going through divorce, going through those contract negotiations, having to go into work and put on I didn't even try to put on a happy face. So I was like, man, I really wish I had this implant, this brain implant, so I could just forget that I'm going through a very awful, nasty divorce and just focus on the job at hand and not have the personal life creep in and pollute my work life, and then have my work life creep in and pollute my personal, it's just like, if I could just compartmentalize and separate, this seems like the way to go. So that's where I was in 2022 mentally. Like, wow, this sounds good. Sign me up. But yeah, so I'm definitely, that's like tied for most anticipated show of 2024. If it is to release in 2024, it says expected, but who knows. And then rounding out the list, Squid Game. Coming back for season 2. It's got an 8 out of 10 from IMDb. Somehow fitting that it was a letter to shareholders that confirmed this popular satire series would be returning to TV in 2024. No details revealed yet on where the show will go, who will be involved in production, but we feel certain we haven't seen the last of the masked men in their life or death stakes competition. So, yeah, I mean, that's another pandemic project that I'm hoping is less Tiger King and more what came out in the pandemic that was super popular and that has continued its reign. Yeah, because that was just like, whoa, so good. And then we'll finish out our TVs and movies talk with the Netflix revealing their 2024 slate of films and series. We just talked about Squid Game. They have another, they have a movie called Damsel coming out, starring Millie Bobby Brown and Angela Bassett. A dutiful damsel agrees to marry a handsome prince only to find the royal family has recruited her as a sacrifice to repay an ancient debt. Now, hold on a second. That sounds awfully familiar to Ready or Not, a movie that I think is criminally underrated that, is it Ready or Not? Yeah, that stars Samara Weaving, who looks an awful lot like Emma Stone a little bit. Yeah, a bride's wedding night takes a sinister turn when her eccentric new in-laws force her to take part in a terrifying game. Yeah, it feels a lot like that. But okay, sure, you got me. You got me interested. You got me. The Umbrella Academy, 7.9 out of 10 on IMDb. I gave it an 8 out of 10. A family of former child heroes, now grown apart, must reunite to continue to protect the world. It feels like it's been forever since that last season streamed. So good to see that it's coming back. I believe, I would imagine it's probably the final season. Yes, it is the final season. There's Bridgerton, Three Body Problem, which we talked about. Hitman, our Professor Moonlighting is a hitman of sorts for his city police department, descends into dangerous, dubious territory when he finds himself attracted to a woman who enlists his services. Stars Glenn Powell and is directed by Richard Linklater. If I had not seen those two names attached, I'd probably be like, ah, I'm all right. Thanks, but I'm okay. Beverly Hills Cop Axel F. Detective Axel Foley finds himself drawn back to the opulent environs of Beverly Hills to investigate the untimely demise of a longtime confidant. Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Kevin Bacon, Judge Reinhold returns. Hey, you know, I already told you that I haven't watched all the Beverly Hills Cop movies. I watched the first one and I was like, I don't get it. Like, I get if you're, you know, alive and kicking during that time, fully conscious, Eddie Murphy was a tour de force. And every time he's on screen, it's electric. I would never have thought, oh, this is going to spawn 3 sequels, possibly 4. I don't know. Rebel Moon Part 2, The Scar Giver. Woof, dude. I mean, I liked that. I was kind of excited when I saw that Rebel Moon Part 1. Like, I just thought, I was just like, all right, cool. Let's just fucking get, you know, Zack Snyder and Charlie Hunnam. And it just feels like it was going to be something great. And then the reviews have been just awful. So that might be something that I just, if it's like nothing's going on, I might flip it on. But it was just sucks that just didn't get off quite take off like I would have hoped. We talked about Avatar, The Last Airbender, The Night Agent. Back in action, former CIA spies Emily and Matt are pulled back in espionage after their secret identities are exposed. Stars Cameron Diaz, Jamie Foxx, and Kyle Chandler. What? Cameron Diaz, I thought she retired. Atlas. This is an action adventure sci-fi. Flick, a bleak-sounding future where an AI soldier has determined that the only way to end war is to end humanity. Come on, AI, you're better than that. Stars Sterling K. Brown, J-Lo, Jennifer Lopez. Yeah, you know. I mean, you know, you got me with sci-fi. The Diplomat, that stars Carrie Russell, Rufus Sewell. In the midst of an international crisis, Kate Weiler, a career diplomat, lands in a high-profile job for which she is not suited, with tectonic implications from her marriage and political future. So I think this is season two. Yeah, new season. There's a shit ton more here. The Netflix Slam, the Netflix Cup, Formula One, Drive to Survive, Love is Blind, Griselda, which is really taken off, stars Sofia Vergara, Unfrosted, the Pop-Tart story, directed by Jerry Seinfeld, and starring Christian Slater, Melissa McCarthy, James Marsden. That looks like it could be pretty funny. Eric, drama thriller about a grief-stricken father whose son goes missing, finds solace through his friendship with Eric, the monster that lives under Edgar's bed. Okay. Benedict Cumberbatch. Okay. 6888. It's about dramatic history, war. Directed by Tyler Perry, Susan Sarandon, Kerry Washington, Senna. Carry On, an action thriller, a mysterious traveler blackmailed Ethan Kopik, a young TSA agent, to let a dangerous package slip through security and onto a Christmas Day flight. American Primeval, the gritty and adventurous exploration of the birth of the American West, the violent collisions of cult, religion, men and women fighting for control of the new world, with Taylor Kitsch. Sweet Tooth, final season, boy is half human, half deer, survives in a post-apocalyptic world with other hybrids. I've been tempted to watch that, but I'm like, I don't think it's for grown-ups, is it? Cobra Kai final season. The Union, action thriller starring Mark Wahlberg and Halle Berry, J.K. Simmons. A down-to-earth construction worker from Jersey is quickly thrust into the world of super spies and secret agents when his high school ex-girlfriend Roxanne recruits him on a high-stakes U.S. intelligence mission. We're still making that fucking kind of movie? Ugh. We're still making that movie. New season of Outer Banks, new season of Emily in Paris, and then Black Doves, a dramatic thriller starring Keira Knightley, about a woman who embarks on a passionate affair with a man who has no idea what her secret identity is, caught in a crosshairs when her lover falls victim to the dangerous London underworld. I don't know, probably pass on that. So yeah, I mean, Squid Game, yeah. Umbrella Academy, yeah. Three Body Problem, yeah. Hitman, maybe. Beverly Hills Cop, Axel F. I don't know. Night Agents, possibly. I'm a sucker for Outer Banks, even though I'm just so frustrated with those fucking kids. Being a dad now, it's just like, yeah, wrong decision. But yet it keeps keep going. No to the Union. Maybe to American Primeval, Unfrosted the Pop-Tart story. That feels like that's a pretty good lineup for Netflix in 2024. Not exactly blown away by a lot of that shit, but, you know, it does attract. I would like to thank you for listening and for watching. It means a lot. It means so much. You don't even know. And we'll talk to you next time. Adios, muchachos.